Well, good morning. It's really lovely to see you all here. And a really good start, I think, of half term for the children that I can see here. And I want to talk about children and young people today, because we often say in this country, and we genuinely mean it, that we want every child to go as far as their talent or ability will allow them to have a really good chance in life. But it doesn't always work like that. And we've got to confront that reality. I was lucky, I was fortunate. I was the first in my family to go to university. But it didn't work even in my family, because for my brother, who had difficulties learning, it didn't work for him. And that's the same for hundreds of thousands of children, year on year. The system doesn't work for them. And actually, they don't have the chance to go as far as their talent or ability would actually allow them to go. They don't get the chance to fulfill their potential. And we have to fight for those children. We have to fight for those young people. We have to show that we're on their side and we're a government that is fighting for them, that we're their government in many respects. Now, good things have happened in schools in terms of standards. The last Labour government put in place the framework for that, and that's been built on. And we need to acknowledge that. But it still doesn't work in the way that it should. I want to go back to my family again because, as I say, I was fortunate. I was being fast-tracked through the system to get to that university place. It was the most incredible experience to go from a village on the Surrey-Kent border to the city of Leeds to go to university and to set me up for a legal career. A really fortunate chance for me to fulfil potential. But for my brother, as I say, had difficulties learning. The system did not work for him. He got put to one side. He got forgotten. He didn't get the support that he needed. And he had to fight every single day just to count, to be seen, to be taken into account. And one of the things that's etched on my mind is something my dad said to me over and over again when I was growing up. Because as I was going through the system, he said to me, "You're not doing any better than Nick, your brother. Nick is doing just as well as you." Because he wanted to instill in me that everybody should have the same chance, that everybody should be gauged by their own ability and have the ability to have that push through. And we need to do that now. Now, it's got better. I don't doubt that from when I was growing up. But is it really true? Do we put equal worth into children and young people who don't want to go to university? Do we really, really value apprenticeships in the way we should? I think apprenticeships are brilliant, by the way. I'd really champion them. I think it's fantastic to leave school and go into an apprenticeship, which is just as skilled, uses just as much brain power, allows children to really show what they can do. But do we really value it when we talk about what our children are doing? Do we really value and talk up apprenticeships in the same way? Because I don't think we do. I don't think that we do. We still have this tilt in the system that suggests university is one thing and apprenticeship is the other. That's not true. It's not right. I don't believe in that. And we need to level this up. We don't believe enough in work, the power of work, what people can do at work. We don't talk this up enough. And so we need to change the system. We need to fight the system. We can't be complacent about this and simply say, well, it's all right, we shrug our shoulders. We've got to fight for the children and young people who need our assistance to make sure they can go as far as their potential and their talent and their ability would take them. So we're fighting for them. And we're about to do a white paper, which is where governments get to set out their proposals about how we make education more inclusive so that every child gets that chance, whatever their background and whatever their ability, they get that chance to go as far as they can on their own abilities and their own talents. So that's what we're pushing forward. And I want to talk about another aspect of challenge for children and young people, and that's social media. Now, confession, I have two teenage children. My boy is 17 and my girl is 15. So I see this in the way many, many parents do. with a real sense of concern about the time that's spent on social media, the content that's available on social media, the addictive nature of a lot of what's happening on social media, the way it draws children in and takes away other aspects of their growing up because it's all online, it's all on their phones or their screens in front of them. I don't think there's a parent in the country who isn't worried about this, by the way. I really don't. Everybody's worried. And they feel, how am I supposed to police this on my own as a parent? And it's very, very difficult. And we as a government need to be up there alongside parents, providing leadership and support for them when it comes to social media. And we will. Now, we've already announced that we're going to do a consultation on banning social media for under 16s. And that will start very soon. But I'm really clear, the status quo, things as they are now, is not good enough. Nobody can make the argument that things can be left as they are. They can't, they're not protective of children, and we intend to act. But what we're doing now is taking the powers available to make sure at the end of that consultation, we can move really fast. Because what can happen with governments, you saw it with the last government, we had an Online Safety Act, which is good because it restricts what's available online. The trouble is, it took 8 years from the original idea to get to an outcome. We can't have 8 years when it comes to social media and whether we ban it or massive restrictions in place. So we've taken the powers now, we're taking the powers to make sure we can act within months, not years. We also need to act very quickly, not just on the age concern, but on the devices and applications that mean the sort of auto-scrolling, the constant gluing to the machine that you can never stop scrolling and it just encourages you, or that one thing follows from another. We have to break that habit to stop the addictive nature. We also need to do with AI bots. This is something relatively new. And we saw with Grok, did you see the thing with Grok just the other week? An AI bot that allowed you to instruct it to undress people. And it did. It was disgusting. Absolutely disgusting. And we went into battle on that because I thought this is not good enough. We went into battle, we made the necessary steps, we threatened action, and we won that battle in relation to Grok, but we've got to do it with all AI bots, and we will do it. And we can do that by amending some of the legislation that we've already got in place. So that is where we're going with this. That is what we need to do. The status quo is not good enough. We need to protect our children. And this government is making protecting our children a number one priority. So whatever is necessary in relation to social media, we will take those steps because it's been talked about for a long time. As I say, there's not a single parent in the country who isn't really worried about this. And many more besides. But we can't just wait and take years and years and years. We need to act very quickly, and that's what we're intending to do. So I wanted to share that with you. We're going to now take some questions from some of you. Then I'm going to take some questions from the media, and then we're going to have a cup of tea, which will be very nice. So anybody got a question? Just yes, madam. Yeah, I think there's two elements of that. We've got the Online Safety Act. That is a good thing. It took 8 years to get there, but it is a good thing. We need to make sure that's used properly and to full effect because there's more we can do with it, and we need to amend it in certain places because one of the difficulties here is that the technology moves on so quickly that the legislation struggles to keep up, which is why for AI bots, for example, and chatbots, we need to take the necessary measures. So that's the one route. The other is, what more do we need to do? This is where we're looking at access for under 16s. Should it be banned altogether? Should it be much stricter content control? And what goes with that, by the way, is how do we make sure children don't operate to get around the rules? Because I think it's hardwired into the job description of children, isn't it? That if there's a limit on when you can do something, the first question would be, how do I get around that? And there are VPNs which can be really effective in relation to that. So all these measures need to be taken. What would you say, madam?
I think the policy ideas around preserving the child's social media after their death, to see in relation to how social media access for them may have affected that, sounds really strong, and that's great for harm prevention after the fact. But here at the MSPCC, we really want to focus on harm prevention before something so tragic like that would happen.
Completely, completely. And that's where we need to be in the preventative space. Rather than the after event. And we're sort of in the after event space at the moment, far too often. Anybody else with a question? Yes, sir.
Hi, my name is Aro, and my question is, as someone who uses social media responsibly, how would this affect us?
I think, look, social media, of course, can be used responsibly, and there's a lot on social media, which is really good in terms of what people can access to expand their horizons. The question is, one, at what age should that be available? Two, what's the content control? Because at the moment, you can access the good stuff and you can access the not so good stuff, the pure, you know, the harmful stuff. The Online Safety Act helps with that. I think even in relation to the good stuff, to be honest, some of the addictive features on social media that mean you never stop scrolling, or once you've watched one thing, another thing comes up and you're on your screen the whole time. We need to look at that, because even if it's good stuff, the question is, how do we get people off it and not simply on their screen the whole time? And it's not just the addiction to the screen and what's that doing to minds and ability to communicate with other people. And concentration generally. It's also at the expense of the other thing that children might be doing, playing with each other, being outside, doing the things that you might expect children to be doing. So nobody is saying there's no good in social media at all. Absolutely not. We use it as a government. And it's used in education, and that's understood. The question is, how do we stop this obsessive behaviour, and what are the limits of at what age you can access things? Other questions, please. Maybe this side. Yes, a young person. This is good. We're saying what should happen. This is the most nervous question I've got now.
Good morning, Prime Minister. I'm George, I'm 17. I want to ask about the Representation of the People Bill, which is being put before Parliament, and how giving 16 and 17 year olds the vote has been incompatible with a social media ban under 16, because the majority of young people get their news from social media, from their TikTok feed. So I wanted to ask, you know, what provisions would the government put in place for citizenship education in schools, for example?
Well, a lot bound up in that. Firstly, I'm a big advocate of votes at 16 and 17. At 16 and 17, you are old enough and mature enough to make a decision about a government that ought to be and will be a government for you. So it's really important that we have those votes. We do need to make sure the citizenship is part of what we look at. We've broadened the curriculum in schools because I think children and young people ought to learn about citizenship and you know, how we operate as a society more generally. It's very important skills that they need for life. I'm acutely aware of your point about news, because in politics there's always been a heavy sort of focus on newspapers, but frankly I don't think many people have, young people certainly, ever read newspapers anymore, or even sit down as a family and watch the 6 or 10 o'clock news. It's much more likely to be through social media, and really goes with the point this gentleman made. We must make sure that we're not cutting off sensible and good access for young people. Where do you get your news from?
Well, I'm kind of the anomaly, so I actually watch the news at 10.
You do watch the news, is it? This is good. This is good.
But the majority of my friends, I'd say, probably get it on TikTok.
Yeah, yeah. Other questions? Yes, madam. And then we'll come to you.
My name's Jasmine. I was just wondering, you know, a lot of the reasons potentially that young people sit at home scrolling is they don't have access to good youth services, sports and arts clubs. So what are you doing around that to make sure that young people have an alternative to sitting at home scrolling?
This is so important because over the last, 15, 16 years, the policy of the last government was to cut. And they cut youth services and youth support massively to the point where in some places it's almost non-existent, apart from where people are doing it on a voluntary basis. We need to turn that back around. And we've just published our youth strategy, which absolutely makes it clear that those services, that support needs to be there in every single place. And it may be sport, it may be clubs, it may be the ability to play music and do things together in a way that isn't available at the moment. Hugely important. So we need to put that back in. The youth strategy was fantastically done because Lisa Nandy, the Secretary of State, did it. And she got a group of young people that she formed into a council to devise the youth strategy because she was really conscious that the last thing any young person needs is a politician much older than them deciding what they want. And so we brought them in. So the strategy actually has the fingerprints of young people. And they were the ones that said they want more services, they want more clubs, they want more that they can access. So they've actually got other things to do with their lives rather than get stuck looking only at social media. And that is really important in all backgrounds. Thank you. I've got a young person here.
Yeah. Hi, my name's Cosma. I'm from FlipGen. And I was wondering how the government's going to make sure that youth voice is properly included in the consultation so that, as you said, you know, the any like decisions made really meet young people where they are and address the harms they face.
Yeah, we must have young people involved in the consultation, just as we had them involved in the youth strategy, because you will have strong views. And it's your future that we are talking about. And therefore, this will be fully accessible. It will be a 3-month consultation. It'll start fairly soon, and we'll make sure that all voices are taken into account. That's the right thing to do. And there are mixed views. Some people very strongly say there should be a complete ban on under 16s. Other people, I think the NSPCC, say not so fast. You might drive children to other places. That won't be so good. We do need to take that into account. But what we can't do is take sort of months and months and months for a consultation, then years and years and years, so that you'll all be well past 16 by the time we actually come to a conclusion. If we're going to take action, and we must, then we need to be in a position to do it quickly, not slowly. And as I say, the Online Safety Act was passed or brought into being by the last government. It is a big improvement, to be fair. It is a big improvement. But honestly, 8 years from the idea that you need to protect against harm online to actually bringing in a provision. And amongst the problems is that in that 8 years, technology then moved on, and therefore the bit you've captured is all very well, but then there's the bit you haven't captured, which isn't so good. I'll take one more and then I'll go to the media. Yes, madam.
Hi, I'm Zainab, I'm one of George Orwell's constituents. So
you've got a great Member of Parliament.
Already about women's safety, particularly in light of the Brock AI scandal. One of my biggest concerns of young women on the internet, posting on social media, is AI and AI misuse. So my question would be, as AI is constantly evolving, what actions are the government taking to combat that AI?
I'm so glad you've raised this, because most people in the room will know what happened with Grok just a few weeks ago. But it was grotesque. An ability to instruct an AI bot to undress, particularly women, online, is just so grotesque and disgusting that you'd think it wouldn't be allowed. You'd think that platform provider, once they saw it, would say, take that down. But that wasn't the case. We went into battle on Grok, and the platform provider, the first response was not, get rid of this disgusting feature. It was, we'll make it a premium service. So you've got to pay for it. I tell you, I'm kidding you not. That is the battle we're in, because the response was not get rid of it. The response was, well, if we restrict access to it to people who can pay for it, is that good enough? We said, no, it's not good enough. That's why we need to act here. In that particular case, we just fought them and fought them and fought them until they backed down. And I'm really proud of what the government did then. But that was, I mean, to go back to a point that was made slightly earlier, that's a reaction to something that's happened. What we need to do is get in early And that's why we're going to bring in an amendment to existing bill going through Parliament so that we can get in early and take the necessary measures. So thank you for that. I think we're going to... Shehab.
Shehab Khan from ITV News. Prime Minister, a few weeks ago I felt as though the prospect of a social media ban for under 16s felt like it was a long way away. Now it feels as though we're managing slightly closer in that direction. Do you feel as though the government has been too slow to act in the past? Is this an indication that you want things to move a lot quicker? And what does your gut instinct tell you about the ban for under 16? And a quick second question, if I may. The think tank Labour Together supported you, your former chief of staff used to run it. There are now calls for an inquiry into the claims that a report was commissioned by potentially a minister in your government who was then used to smear journalists. Will you answer those calls and will you launch an inquiry?
Firstly, on the question of social media, look, we need to go at speed. And that's really, if there's one takeaway from what I'm saying this morning, it is we need to go at speed. Everybody, I think, pretty much, perhaps the platform providers are the exception, knows that we need better protection for children. We haven't got it. The status quo is not good enough. And as I said a moment ago, the Online Safety Act, yes, a good piece of legislation under the last government, but it took 8 years from the discussion that something needs to be done to an outcome. I'm not prepared to let this take 8 years, which is why we're taking the powers now. We'll have the consultation, and then when we've got the outcome, we can implement it very, very quickly. And I say implement it because there will be action coming out of this consultation. There is no way we have a consultation here and conclude that the status quo is fine. Things don't need to change. They don't protect children enough. We need to take action to fight for those children and fight for their parents, frankly, because a lot of parents feel, I'm left to police this on my own. How am I supposed to do that? I need a government that's up there with me. So yes, absolutely, we want to go more quickly. In relation to the consultation, look, I'm open-minded about it. I can see the argument for a ban. I can see the argument that a much more restrictive content-based approach, which doesn't necessarily cut out news and useful information. I think we need to test those options in the consultation, but whatever the outcome, it can't be nothing. It can't be the status quo. We have got to act to protect children. We've got to act, frankly, to help parents and carers who are all really worried about this in relation to their own children and the children they know, and they want to know the government's on their side and it's going to come up and show leadership and support to them in what they need to do. In relation to your second question on Labour Together, there will be a Cabinet Office investigation into the allegations, and quite right too. And so that is already in place. I didn't know anything about this investigation, and it absolutely needs to be looked into. So the Cabinet Office will be establishing the facts. Thank you, and I think I'm taking a second one from Chris.
Thanks, Chris from PMPA. To talk about keeping people safe more widely, the Chief of the Defence Staff and his German counterpart have been in the newspapers talking about the moral case for the army. Do you need to start making that moral case? And does that involve bringing the 3% of GDP spending target forward to 2029?
Well, thank you for that. You will have seen over the weekend, I was making the argument at the Munich Security Conference that we, the UK and Europe, need to step up when it comes to defence and security. We have a threat of Russian aggression, which is obvious. In a few days' time, it's the four-year anniversary of the start of the conflict in Ukraine. We want a just and lasting peace, but that will not extinguish the Russian threat. And we need to be alert to that, because that's going to affect every single person in this room, every single person in this country. So we need to step up. That means on defence spending, we need to go faster. We've obviously made commitments already in relation to that. But it goes beyond just how much you spend. It's also whether you coordinate and collaborate with other like-minded countries, particularly in Europe. And that's the case I've been making, which is that in addition to how much you spend, it's got to be how you work together as a group of countries. How we make NATO stronger, a European NATO, if you like. NATO has been the most successful military alliance the world has ever seen. Countries which, across the continent, used to be on the battlefield against each other for centuries, now stand together, ready to defend each other. That's what we need to build on. That will affect every person in this country, and that's where I'm absolutely determined that the United Kingdom will show the leadership that's necessary. Thank you very much indeed. I think I'm now going to have a cup of tea. And I'm going here. Or at least I may not have. I may not have here. How are you doing? Nice to see you.